You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
I'm going to press recording. This is too good. This is probably the best stuff. We're talking about Louisiana crawfish because I'm wearing this t-shirt that I literally grabbed because it was dark when I got dressed this morning.
There you go.
You know, only because the sun hadn't risen because I'm normally up so early. I do my 15-mile run, you know, and then I do my meditation and I drink green juice. Been harvested by wizards on a blue moon.
I love it.
You know, and then all of that, and then I'll read for a few hours, and then generally I'll wake up because all of that was a dream, and then I sort of, you know, reach for the nearest coffee,
bacon, and you know,
the food of the gods.
You know, there you go.
The cure for vegetarianism.
There you go. The opposite of 15-mile runs and green juice from wizards.
Yes. Yeah. No. I think that's my plan. I did actually get my bicycle out of the garage the other day, which is an important first step.
Baby steps.
You know all about fitness, don't you, Dr. Chirag Shamassian?
Do I?
Have I pronounced it correctly?
Shamassian, that's right. Yeah, thank you for asking. Do I know all about fitness? I enjoy fitness.
So I'm very conscious of needing to sort of, you know, push my stomach under my chest as I speak to you.
Right.
Even though there is obviously, you know, people may listen to this rather than just watching it. But it's the same thing. Whenever you speak to a doctor, you always think, oh, God, he can tell that I've eaten far too much bacon, drank too much coffee. And you can just, you have that, even though it's thousands of miles away through an internet connection.
That's
right.
I can
see the pity in your eyes as you look upon me.
Or, you know, or I'm saluting your mental health. You know, you seem satisfied with all these things. So, you know, either way.
I think I'll take that.
You're okay with
that's
me.
That's right. Yes. I love the fact you say I'm satisfied with your mental health in the sense that I'm not dissatisfied. In other words, I'm not scared. We may continue this interview
about
now
it.
On account
That's
of the
right.
fact that you're not certifiable.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So there you go. I'm excited to chat with you.
Well, good. Well, let me disavow you of that immediately. Let me set low expectations and consistently fail to achieve them.
Perfect.
But I guess expectations is a key word here, isn't it? Because, you know, you are a medical doctor, which is something that I always wanted to be. And I'm going to make this interview all about me now. So, but it's something because it's compelling because of the science, the interaction, you know, being able to, you know, discover the mechanics of the human body and at the same time be a human and delve into, you know, the magic of how we work. Is does that still today cause cold winds to brush across your temples?
Yeah. Well, one thing I should just clarify off the top. So I'm actually not a medical doctor by training. So I have a PhD in clinical psychology.
That's close enough. So,
yeah. Well, and I help people get into medical school and I do that full time. And so definitely familiar with, you know, the medical field, especially medical education and certainly, you know, psychology and psychiatry and all that good stuff. So
I think that's slightly worse, actually. I feel even more open and under.
Yeah, more exposed.
More exposed, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is fascinating. I mean, the work that I used to do a lot of work in neuroimaging and, you know, diagnosing various conditions and stuff like that. It is fascinating stuff. And it is a treat to, you know, get to know a bunch of students who are exceptional and, you know, that we assist with getting into these great programs year after year.
Tell me about, you know, so how did you come across this? Because it's not a natural pathway, you know, to cross the chasm between professions and business. You know, so it's, tell me, you know, about your journey. It's a horrible word to use, but that, you know, the pathway and what brought you here.
So it sort of developed organically and out of necessity. I don't know of any 8-year-olds who are saying, I want to help people get into college one day or medical school. You know, admissions isn't like a cool thing that little kids aspire to, at least none that I've met. And So really, I mean, my story was, you know, attended a small high school in Los Angeles that had very little in the way of college counseling, but I wanted, you know, to get into great schools. And so I was self-taught with the process and achieved my own success, got into great programs, got a ton of financial aid and scholarships, and people started asking me for help. And then I was at college. And I was pre-med the whole time. So I was actually aspiring to go to medical school and did very well at Cornell, you know, had around a 3.9 GPA and was learning everything about that process and helping people get in even before I had gotten in. And certainly after I left school, I was helping people get in. And, you know, I used to do it, you know, just on the side because I enjoyed it and people needed help. But then people were being tremendously successful and, you know, two people became four people became eight and, you know, and it sort of grew from there. And I just really enjoy it because there's a lot of misinformation, first things first, right? And it's a high stakes process. So just being able to help people achieve their educational and career goals is tremendous. The other thing is I meet a lot of interesting people. You know, I speak with a lot of students every single year, each of whom has their own story and path and the things they focus on. And just understanding how different people arrive at the same point is fascinating and helping them craft their story. So it was organic, like I said, out of necessity. And I feel very fortunate, honestly, to be in this position.
But it's a fascinating story because just the concept of understanding that there is a process behind seeking education at presumably an early age, I think probably slightly beyond the age of eight. But still, you know, most people, I think, really just go through the education process assuming that they will be guided by, you know, people whose job it is to guide those people without really understanding or without. I mean, do you find this? Is my assumption anywhere near the mark where people don't work backwards from an objective to try and find out how to reach that objective? They tend to sort of wumble forwards, as it were, and find themselves in situations. Is that a true sort of observation?
You know, it really varies. A lot of the students that we support have wanted to be physicians for quite some time. It's not very common for someone to, say, be an accountant and then say, you know what, I'm 30 now and I'm going to switch gears. There are those people, but they're not very common. And, you know, so most of the people I, you know, work with knew from before they wanted to be doctors.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily know how to get there. Their parents may or may not be doctors. Maybe they studied here. Maybe they didn't study here, you know, in this country, in the States, but they, you know, they have an objective in mind usually, but they don't know what to do to get there.
The mark of a true profession though, isn't it? Where someone is just knows that they want to be doctor. They know that
it's a long road.
Yes.
It's a really long road and there's no real alternative. Like, right, if you want to do that thing, you're going to do that thing. And, you know, it's not like there's another field that's highly similar or something like that. You can argue, you know, nurses or PAs and stuff like that, but to be, you know, fully in charge of patient care and overseeing that kind of stuff and, you know, being able to really change people's lives in that way, it's a pretty special field.
And what is involved? So in other words, if you were to look at the key criteria or the key sort of cornerstones of becoming a successful applicant, aside from the academic requirements, you know, what are the most challenging things that people don't really understand until they start the process?
Yeah, so academics are easy to wrap our heads around, right? You got to get certain grades, you got to get certain score on the MCAT or, you know, but where things get really complicated is beyond stats, because now you're thinking about extracurricular activities and you're also thinking about, you know, how to write great essays, whom to get rec letters from, you know, having great interviews and things like this. And I think a lot of times, you know, people really treat the extracurricular process as a series of checkboxes. You know, I have to do this many hours of this. I get so many questions every day. How many hours of this do I need to do? And if you try to distill it into a numbers game, you're not going to do well because you're not going to really develop a clear theme across your application. You know, it's sort of like, you know, you're a podcast host and, you know, if someone said, well, what do you do? And you said, well, I talk to these kinds of people and I also talk about these kinds of people. If you did 40 different things, you're not going to be, you know, the go-to guy for anything. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem because, you know, we live in a highly specialized world and an increasingly specialized world, and you have to have a shtick. And so, you know, having a cohesive narrative where, you know, your research interests align with some of the service work you do and the clinical work you do and the story you tell about yourself and the genesis of your desire to be a medicine, we have to craft a story. You're essentially marketing yourself. And
this is because of the competitive nature of the number of people that are looking for admissions compared to the number of available places.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah, for MD programs, you know, for the sort of the primary medical doctor degree in the United States, we have DO programs too, but there aren't as many of those. You know, around 40% of people get in to any one school in a year, in any given year, meaning around 60% of people don't get in anywhere. And every year it gets harder and harder. Go ahead.
Saying, so it's not just based on the academics. So
No. Go ahead.
So all I was going to say is all of the extra layers of sort of complexity that you need to bring with you to the application, when do you need to start thinking about that?
I mean, at the start of college, you know, if your goal is to go straight through or take just a gap year or two, you really have to plan out the right coursework, the right extracurriculars, the right, you know, when to take the MCAT, which is the standardized exam for school, you know, whom to develop regular relationships with. And so you got to start early. I want to also, you know, talk into, I assume you're not American based on, you know, your accent.
See, this is what I mean. See, brain the size.
So, smart. I can hear an accent. Yes. Right. Yeah. So the reason I bring that up, because you asked earlier, you know, why is it because it's competitive that schools want all this stuff? That's part of it. The other thing is it's a very American thing. Yes. To wanna, you know, my parents are immigrants from Lebanon, and I know I've spoken with people from so many countries around the world. And you talk to folks, and a lot of them are confused about why the heck does someone want an essay? What is this like? I wanna get to know you, the whole person. I think we take it for granted in the States, but these are pretty American phenomena as far as, you know, making sure to explore different interests, write about them, all this kind of, whereas other, you know, other schools in other countries, they tend to be much more numbers focused. You got to get these marks.
Yes.
And that's what it is. It's an aptitude thing. And it's just very different here. And so you just have to, play the American game, if you will. I'm not trying to mock it in any way. I think there's a lot of value in the system we have here. But, you know, for folks who aren't, you know, as familiar with US admissions, it's really critical to keep that in mind.
And also, I mean, as a non-American, I mean, you know, in terms of both of us, we can both say that we were born outside the US. Do you think it helps in terms of perspective? Because from an analytical perspective, are you able to take a step back and see the logic behind why these additional requirements are there? And
I do.
As opposed to being inside the jar looking out. And is that something that sort of really helped you? Because funnily enough, you know, as an immigrant or as a, you know, as a non-US person, I see that as well. You see things and you don't take anything for granted. You did that give you a head start from the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, you have to think. So you always got to ask yourself, you know, why do they care about this other stuff? Because, you know, numbers are numbers, but they don't tell me anything about you other than your aptitude and achievement level. And, you know, when I'm trying to evaluate someone to become a physician, I want to know about what drives them. You know, how do they spend their time? What extracurriculars did they pursue? You know, what do others say about them? What do they bring to the table? What's their life context? What's their path to medicine? I think there's a lot of value in that because people, you know, have very, very different stories. Some grew up with lower income than others. Others are part of certain minority groups that, you know, have been historically underserved. Others have a particular interest in doing research in a certain field or serving a certain community. And all those things, if I just said, okay, I'm going to focus on the numbers, that's a lot of rich information that I'm not going to be able to capture. And so that's why it matters to think about that from a much higher level.
And I also agree. I mean, having had a very minor exposure to the British medical system a few years ago through, I was part of Virgin's London Air Ambulance. So I got an inside view of how it works, you know, that you don't normally see. And it's, you know, this was some time ago, but it was pretty antiquated, you know, almost Victorian in terms of the approach and the layers of, you know, people and the hierarchies. And again, I think it's actually really encouraging to see that the approach that's taken over here in the US is much more holistic. In other words, if you're dealing with someone who has a medical condition, it's a people job. So just being able to crunch numbers or remember, you know, gamma aminobutyric acid at the drop of a, you know, drop of a penny may not necessarily serve you. So that's a fabulous thing. But also my question is, having been through the process with so many people, are there certain characteristics that pop out that make you more competitive if you're able to focus on those? And are you able to create that sort of feedback loop where you can tell people, don't do it this way, do it this way, because you'll have a much better chance of success?
That's exactly what we do. That's exactly what we do. So the you know, it really, the admissions process, sometimes people think like, oh, I'm applying this cycle. And but what you did a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that's when it actually started. And so that's why we work with students from the beginning of college all the way through. By the time they get to medical school, we also help people in medical school, you know, get into residency programs. And you see patterns of students who are super successful. And honestly, the number one, you know, thing that I observe is an intensity. And I almost say that like an intense nerdiness, if that makes sense. Because people who are like really, really into a certain area or two, and who just explored that with intensity, you know, it's not great when you, you know, when you've done research with geriatric populations, the community services with kids, the clinical work you've done is, you know, abroad, just the general population in Costa Rica or whatever. Like, there's no, it's like, well, who, what's this dude about? You know, like,
what does that mean? The words you're using, you know, intensity, are often, you know, replaced by that horribly overused word, passion.
Oh yeah. I don't like that word very much either, because, you know, people often talk about, you know, I need to find my passion. And, you know, passion is not Isaac Newton's apple that will one day fall on your head and you realize what it is. You know, passion is something that you have to do stuff and learn whether or not you like it. And then if you like it, keep doing it. If you don't like it, well, what aspects did you like? What didn't you? And you can pivot. And I think that people sometimes are so scared, so nervous about choosing the wrong thing, that they just get frozen in their tracks and they don't act. I mean, you know, you talk about startups. How many people do we know? I just need the right idea. I just need that. No, dude, you just need to do something.
Yes.
And see where, you know, where that takes you. But then also, but then there's the other thing where people act out of anxiety, right? Where it's like they're worried about not doing enough or falling behind. So they just follow their neighbors and they, you know, they develop these very well-rounded generic profiles where, you know, you ask them, you know, what's going to stand out about this person, and nothing comes to mind. So the real rock stars in all of this are the people who are very, like I said, focused in an area or two. Maybe they just care about child social welfare. And so, you know, they worked in policy. They did research on, you know, how to develop the right social welfare policies. Their clinical experiences or patient exposure experiences were in the foster system, whatever the case might be. And so they just have an intensity about them. And a clear shtick where I can sort of hang my hat and say, aha, this is what makes this person special. And that's really the key.
It is. And it's very interesting because a lot of people that I speak to in terms of where they are today compared to where they started, it's normally completely different. So no one really, you know, in the business world, in the entrepreneurial world, it's not, you don't have the same linear pathway to a profession. So people start with something which leads to another thing, which leads to another thing. And you know, many people find themselves doing something that they never expected themselves doing.
Sure.
But it comes out of some problem that they've had that they've found a solution to that they feel. So, and again, so it doesn't start out as a passion. So people, you know, don't wake up saying, I feel passionate about this or that. But you're absolutely right. What happens is through adversity, through effort and engagement and immersion, they find themselves in something where they become very good at it. They get success. That success feeds their enjoyment. And you're right.
Sure.
You know, and you can detect that intensity with someone because you can detect the fact that every neuron in their brain is thinking about this at the same time.
Yep.
And I think, so question then, because there is a question in here, is that something that you are born with or is that something that you can develop? So can you coach people to become intense and to have that real joy about what they're doing, which can be delivered in the interview environment?
I think so. And, you know, that's the thing. You just have to, you know, nudge students to pursue things, you know, that we feel might become an area of great interest, but also make sure to pull the reins when people are just trying to nervously tack on things to their resume, you know? And you just have to be very deliberate and have those hard conversations about, well, you know, why would you not do that? Why would you do that? What's the worst case scenario if you don't like it? You're not going to break anything. You're just going to, you know, try something different. And, but teaching people how to not act out of anxiety or fail to act out of anxiety, I think is a really big thing, because you're right. You said something really interesting there. The better you get at something, the more you enjoy it. We all like things we're good at. You know, people who enjoy cooking, they tend to be better cooks. And, you know, that applies to everything. But if you don't try it, you're never going to get good. You're never really going to develop that intensity or that passion to do it. So that's why I think it's really critical for us to have those conversations early and treat it very deliberately. We know what we don't like. We know what we've tried before, but we oftentimes don't know what we are going to like. We only have suspicions and we got to pursue them.
But your approach then has to be far wider than just a medical application. You're teaching people how to handle failure, how to try things, and you're trying to do that in a relatively short space of time, which is the college years, while people are developing as individuals.
Yep.
So the benefit that your program brings is not just the fact that you'll get into medical school. It's that, you know, you're looking at life through a different lens.
Sure.
You're willing to try new things. And so how challenging is that? And, you know, to find the raw material, because presumably you're going to turn a lot of people down as well, because, you know, you can only work with the willing. So,
right.
You know, how difficult is it to find people, because you want to be successful as well. You don't want to get to the end of the period where, you know, so that's the challenge, sort of works both ways, I would have thought.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an interesting field. I love that you brought that up. You know, you're teaching people how to, you know, fail. You're teaching them how to rethink things that they thought they might like or not like. We have a lot of students who go through big realization moments, you know, and I found too, you know, when we focus so much on academics and, you know, certain achievements and all that kind of stuff, one of the concerning things I've observed over the years is we have a lot of students who have done well their whole lives. You know, they were in grade school and high school and they did really well. They're usually at near the top of their class. They go to these good colleges. All of a sudden, by definition, not everyone's going to be the best of the best. And so you have a lot of people also who get their first dose of reality that, yes, you know, where, you know, you're not the top of the heap. And people have to really work through that stuff emotionally too. You know, when I was in high school, I was at the top. Now I'm not. Should I still become a doctor? Is it all over for me? What does that mean about my identity? I always thought I would be a doctor. So, you know, people really latch onto these images of themselves, yes, and what they had to be and what it had to look like. And so when people struggle, it just completely rattles their self-image and their worldview.
Yes.
And I just find that it's critical to, you know, teach our students how to accept that in life.
And I guess you are uniquely qualified based on, you know, the work that you've done to be able to spot these types of pathways. So if someone is going down this sort of, you know, denial pathway or you know, if they're likely to fail because of a self-induced belief that they're not going to be able to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I suppose that, do you find the people that you work with, at what age would you say you have that sort of realization that everything may not be rosy? Does it happen in high school or does it happen in, you know, do you see these moments where suddenly people think, oh my God, hang on, you know, this is actually going to be harder than I thought?
Mm-hmm. I think it's different for everybody. You know, my story is different. You know, I grew up, like I said, with immigrant parents, and there were, you know, financial challenges growing up. I grew up with Tourette syndrome, you know, a diagnosis I still carry. And so there was a lot about, you know, that I had to work through, whether it was, you know, social stuff or, you know, coming to terms with, well, am I good enough and all this kind of stuff. And for other people, you know, they've coasted through high school and they get to college and that's the first time, you know, they get quote unquote punched in the mouth, so to speak, right?
Yeah,
where they have that difficult moment. And
yes.
And so it's, I think, you know, at every point it comes. And then there are some people who, you know, go through medical school, they're in residency, they're tired. Maybe they're even in their attending, you know, positions and they say, oh my gosh, am I going to do this for the next 30, 40 years? You know, and then they have their own. So these, it's not, so our goal in life is not to, you know, avoid these difficult situations, is to learn how to, it's to accept that they're going to happen and to cope with them. And, you know, I, it's funny you said like, well, this is where my training really comes in. Someone recently asked me, they're like, do you feel like you use your psychology background? I say, probably now more than ever. You know, I feel more like a psychologist than ever in that, you know, there are like, there's a lot of, there are a lot of like thoughts and emotions that our students deal with, you know, that they're, that we're helping them navigate, you know, as young adults. And on top of that, we're helping them craft stories in a way that's going to be compelling to a different person reading it. So we have to put ourselves in the mind, or we have to adopt their thinking and think, okay, what might an admissions committee member think about this? And so there's a lot of this dance going on day to day. And it's very different than what a student has had to do. Usually they had to study the Krebs cycle and take a test, or, you know, the molecular structure of GABA, like you brought up earlier, right?
It's the only thing I can remember.
Yeah, well, hey, that's a good one. It has a good chemical name. But no, when you're sitting and you're like, oh my gosh, I took all these pre-med courses. Now they want me to write creative nonfiction. What does this have to do with being a doctor? I've never written something like this before. And people panic. And so our job is to help assuage their concerns and help them deliver awesome information.
But the important thing about your business is it's outcome focus. So, you know, it is not therapy.
No, not at all. So to be clear, I'm not practicing as a psychologist in my work, just that, you know, the application,
but it's
really
like that,
important.
I mean, do you get people that go in that sort of view it? I mean, but the important thing for you, I guess, the challenge for you is to say, look, this is an outcome focused process. The outcome is to get you into the medical school that you want.
Yeah.
So in other words, we're going to go through certain steps that are going to be painful because, you know, they are not going to resonate with who you think
sure.
you are. But I suppose the real challenge is, one of the challenges when you're working with people is for those people to think that you're going to provide all of the answers and you're going to give them this sort of, you know, bucket list of, you know, things. I thought you were going to provide me a presentation then, just popped up saying, you know, here are the 10 ways to get into medical school.
That's
copy
right.
And you'll be fine. But it's not like that, is it? You know, do people think, you know, I'm going to work with Dr. Chirac and therefore I'm going to get in because all I'm going to do is follow his process?
Yeah, it's, there's, you know, we have to be honest about our limits too. You know, there are, we can always prescribe what we think a student ought to do, but a student actually has to execute those things. You know, we help our students secure research internships, but you have to do the work and you have to build a relationship with the researcher to get a great rec letter to publish. Or if you're doing, you know, starting a service initiative, you actually have to do it and organize it and execute it. And so there's a lot of hard work involved. And, you know, absolutely, I feel incredibly confident in our ability to help students achieve their goals.
Yes.
But I don't take, you know, our students get in at pretty extraordinary rates, but I'm very mindful not to take all the credit, right? Because I'm not the one who actually was in the lab that day. I'm not the one, you know.
Again, what you're doing is you're providing a framework to enable
exactly.
them to excel. So what are the most unexpected things that have come out of this business from the things that you least expected?
Oh my gosh. I suppose it depends on when in the process you ask me different things come up. I mean, from the beginning, right? Like when I decided, oh, I, you know, I'm getting more demand. Let me start doing this work and, you know, more intensely. And I started, you know, people would ask me for resources. Hey, Dr. Shamasian, do you have a great resource on the medical school personal statement? And then I would say no. And I would look for it and I didn't find it. I was like, let me start writing this. I think I could write a good one. And wrote stuff for other sections. And then all of a sudden I was getting non-referrals coming.
Yes.
And that was, and then I was like, who are you? You know, how did you find me? And they're like, Google. I was like, what? They're like, oh yeah, I found your blog. I was like, oh, I never thought before about how something ends up. And so we developed a much larger, you know, blogging approach and SEO framework that has paid, you know, dividends as far as reaching great students. So that was unexpected. Unexpected about, you know, number of students that we would support one day. I mean, unexpected that I got stopped at a hamburger store one day and said, are you Dr. Schmidt? You know, like, and
yes.
I'm like, okay, you know, like, it's just been a...
Presumably,
it's just
you were on this side of the counter.
Yeah. That's right.
So it's just... You're the one flipping the burgers, yeah.
Yeah, it's just been really interesting. You know, there have been, you know, just from a student perspective, we've helped people, you know, get into basically every single medical school, usually many times over. That's been unexpected just because of, you know, the reach yes. that I never thought, you know, we could have. It's and there have been other difficulty, you know, people who have certain expectations despite not having the backgrounds, you know, for it. A lot of everyone wants to get into Harvard Medical School, but, you know, not everyone has the background.
I think Harvard is massively overrated myself, which is why I didn't go, you know, so.
But, you know, it's one of those things. So just, you know, it's always about navigating, you know, wherever we are very thoughtfully, because I'm a stickler for, you know, quality of support. And even as we've supported more students over time, I'm very obsessive about making sure that the quality of support is excellent. And so we have a lot of things in place to make that happen. So again, systems and payroll and, you know, maintaining a website, just stuff like this that I truly, I was just the guy who was very good at helping students.
Yes.
And now there are things I think about that I never thought I would think about. There are issues I used to deal with that I think are, you know, small potatoes now. There are certainly issues I deal with now that I will think are small potatoes in a couple, you know, and that's sort of that's been the fun thing where it never gets old. There's always some new lever to press or to pull and all that kind of stuff. So it's been a cool journey.
And do you think that what you're doing is something that has to be focused around you ultimately to maintain that quality or people that are very close to you? In other words, is this something that can over time be delivered through courses and through downloadable videos?
Yes.
Or does it always need that element of one-to-one, look me in the eyes and tell me, you know, I need to find out who you are truly as a person before I can help you?
Yes and no. I mean, it's like if you read a book on a subject versus hire a coach to help you do the thing.
Yeah.
It's very similar. You know, if you think about a home fitness program, you know, you can follow someone's YouTube videos or, you know, get a 30-day calendar for yoga. Most people don't do it, or they don't do it as well. They don't push themselves as hard, or they don't know how to do it. They don't know the right technique. So it's very similar. You know, I put a lot, you know, our site has massive amounts of content. We have a bunch of YouTube videos. You know, we'll develop courses over time, all these kinds of things. So let me put it to you this way, Matt, like it's not an information problem.
Yes.
There's sufficient information out there. Isn't that true of everything? How do I lose weight and get a six pack? Well, work out and eat less, you know, or that's, you know, that's how, but then doing that right. Well, what do I eat?
Yes.
The willpower to do it, all that kind of, that's a different story. And I think there's similarities here. I give all the information, and every single year there are people who come to me and they say, you know, Dr. Shamasian, I've never met you before. You don't know who I am, but I exclusively use your materials and I got into X, Y, and Z medical school. And I say, that's wonderful. And then there are other people who say, this is absolutely valuable. It's massive amounts of information. Now I want it applied in a custom way to my life.
Yes.
And so I think that that's never going to go out of style.
Yes.
You know, there's a reason why, you know, people hire coaches, whether it's a personal trainer or, you know, or whatever. Or even if you can make a great taco, there's a reason you still go to the Mexican restaurant. You either don't want to make the taco, or, you know, the other guy makes the better taco than you.
Yes.
And so I think there's always going to be value in it.
Yes. And again, do you find yourself as well over time that you dispense with the fluff and that your approach to people becomes much more digital, much more factual, much more, as the number of your clients grows, your delivery becomes more precise and more sort of take it or leave it?
Yeah, I mean, the take it or leave it is funny. I think I become more me over time, if that's what you're asking.
Yes.
I think, well, because you also recognize, so, you know, when you're starting a business and stuff like that, I don't know if this is just personal. I'm sure other entrepreneurs go through this too. You want to impress and you don't want to ruffle any feathers, right? And so like you take maybe a safer tack to the way you produce content. But then like your writing is not as, you know, strong as far as speaking to the audience. You're sort of like trying to give information, but not piss anyone off. And then, but as you know, as you grow and you're delivering great information, people are basically, you know, they're knocking on your door and they're saying like, tell me what to do. And now it's like, okay, like you actually want to know what I think. Here it is.
Yes.
And so over time, I think our content has become, less fluff for sure. I get to, people write comments on our website every day. I type a lot of responses. I tell people like it is.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because like people don't want fluff.
Yes, you're right.
Except as an entrepreneur, in the beginning, when we're nervous, we give people fluff because we want everyone to like us or whatever. And then sometimes though, people say they don't want fluff, but want you to give them fluff, but not really, right? You get some people who say, Dr. Shamasian, is this the thing? And you're like, you want the honest answer? It's A, not B. But this other detail, let me give it to you. Will you change your mind? No, it's still A, not B. But I thought it was that still A. Okay.
And they go away and say, okay, he said you. A, but I think he meant B.
Yeah. But that is what it is. But our job is to deliver the right information and the right value. Yes. Whether someone takes it is on them. But I found myself, even in this conversation, I wouldn't talk as openly. I would, several years ago, right?
Yes.
I'm sort of like, I think I've developed also maybe more comfort in my skin and also know that we do good work.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
And it's like, why the heck am I going to sugarcoat if I know we do darn good work,
I think that's the most important thing. I think the moment, it comes back to what you were saying at the beginning about, that intensity, the more you believe in what you're doing, and it's true belief.
And you have mastery.
Yeah, and the better you get at it, the more relaxed you come, the more happy you are to say, look, I can't be all things to all people. Not everyone is going to like what sure. I'm doing, but I'm pretty happy with it. And I think there's some real value there. So I'm just going to soldier on and I think that's a real gift actually, to be able to find something that delivers that sense of, and that's the real joy of being an entrepreneur, where you create something that you're proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's yours and you're in control. And you have the confidence to, stand up amongst everyone else which is fabulous. And that I'm sure comes across to your students, and they, through a process of osmosis, pick up that confidence and clarity that mm-hmm. can do nothing other than help them on their journey.
Yeah. And you get better and better and faster over time. You know where to strike the hammer, so to speak, right?
Yes.
And you just become more efficient, and you get it. It's funny, you get faster and better.
Yes.
And it's pretty awesome because now, I can read a resume 30 seconds a minute, pretty quickly identify the good and the bad and what you ought to do. I used to have to take much longer. And so it's a treat. I mean, going back to developing a passion, again, I used to do it because I want to be helpful. Now I do it because I love it. And,
yes.
And students, find a ton of value from it. If we weren't doing a good job, I wouldn't be here.
Yes.
And it's just a treat. Seriously.
It's fascinating stuff. So great. Well, I think now would be a good time to bring in the Hooked on Startups quick fire questionnaire.
Let's do it.
Dr. Chirag Shamasian. Question number one, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word. I don't know why. I just thought, I'm just going to say the first thing that came on my mind, onomatopoeia. I don't know why. I just thought of a crazy word. I
mean, obviously, it's one of the greatest words ever created.
Yeah, sure.
Question number two, what is your least favorite word?
I'm going to say moist, not because I dislike it, but because I think my wife dislikes it and, I'm going to throw her a bone there.
You're right. There are far too many conflicting vowels and syllables there, I think.
It's, yeah, people just think word. It sounds weird. I don't know.
Yes. Question number three. What are you most excited about right now?
Most excited about right now? I'm really excited about cheese. We had an amazing cheese plate last night and I had some for lunch today, and I'm just really excited about cheese these days. But, that aside, cheese aside, as far as, business goes, I'm just really excited about continuing to refine systems and build courses. We have some exciting stuff coming out for our students who are studying for the MCAT. And so, because we've done so much of the one-on-one work for years, and I feel very confident about that, I'm really excited to just challenge myself in some other avenues.
All I can think about is cheese now.
Cheese. Sorry.
Yeah, really good cheese. I'm talking about, Camembert, Robuchon, and, some of the really good ones that you...
We had a great Taleggio last night. Yeah. I had cheese on my mind.
Yes. And why, God, I'm we're going to have to rush through these now. Sorry. I have somewhere I need to be.
There you go.
The refrigerator. Question number five. Sorry, I'm going to give up. I'm obviously rubbish at this. Question number four. What turns you off right now?
What turns me off right now? Waking up too early. You know, we have a three-year-old at home. Love him to death. Sometimes I just want to sleep a little bit longer. But as far as what turns me off...
Have you tried closing the door? I mean, you take turns with your wife to close the door.
Yeah, it doesn't work out. There's the whole monitor and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I want to sleep a little bit more. No, what do I dislike right now? You know, I live in Southern California. Delta, you know, variant COVID cases are on the rise here. And just kind of bummed about, you know, maybe having to, you know, stay in again in the fall. I really love food and eating out and stuff like that. I it would be a bummer to not be able to go to restaurants and stuff like that. But otherwise, I feel fine.
That, and, you know, right, you say question number five, because I've got the hang of this now. What sound or noise do you love?
What sound? When my son says, hi, Baba. I really love that.
Now I can guess the next one. What sound or noise do you hate?
Dog barking when I'm on a phone call.
Right. Yeah, that's right. They have this particular skill, don't they? That's right.
Their timing is impeccable.
Yeah. Question number seven. What is your favorite curse word?
Favorite curse word.
But don't worry, you can say whatever you like because no one's listening.
Yeah, that's right. No one's listening. In Armenian, there's a word barab. It means empty. Like if something's like a stupid situation or something like that, you got barab. Like,
yeah.
I say that to myself all the time.
Which is fabulous. I'm learning so much here. I'm going to adopt that one. And I'm going to leave a link. So if anyone sort of, you know, wants to find out what this word means.
B-A-R-A-B, barab. Yeah.
All sorts of wiki resources on the etymology of barab. Question number eight.
Yeah.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Oh, boy. You know, when I decided, you know, after college that I was not going to pursue medicine, I was actually debating between clinical psychology and urban planning. I really love maps and cityscapes, and I'm interested in architecture. I love food. So I don't know. I feel like I would be a really good, what is it when someone, like a travel planner, but
yes,
around food. Like if you said, hey, I'm going to be in Los Angeles for 4 days, where should I eat? And I will build an itinerary for you. I would be excellent at that.
Yes. Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Well, there is still room for that.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'll look out for the next, can't remember what's the name of that guide, where you have this.
Oh, like Zagat or Michelin.
Yeah. Combination of Michelin and anyway. Question number nine. What profession would you not like to attempt?
What would I not want to attend? Probably something in botany. I feel like I've tried to grow plants several times and it doesn't work out for me, and certainly not for the plants. So I feel bad for them. So that's probably something that I should avoid.
Yes. Herbs as it's pronounced over here. I've always had success with mint.
Huh?
Only because it's a weed and you can't actually control the growth. Everything else, I know what you mean. I am Dr. Death.
Yeah, it's just something.
I mean,
something,
I think they're just plants generally are high maintenance. They need feeding, they need watering, and, you know, and
yeah,
they're unforgiving.
Not my thing. Don't have a green thumb, but, yep, you know, I'll try to change that. I'm trying to grow a cactus here.
Other things. Know, yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah. The gift that keeps on giving. My final question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I'm proud of you.
Excellent. Excellent. Dr. Chirag Sumashian, I just put my teeth back in. I cannot begin to express the gratitude that I have for you coming on my humble show and delivering such pearls of knowledge and wisdom. So how do people find out about you and how to take advantage of the services you
provide? Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. This was a really fun and thoughtful conversation for me as well. So I'm very grateful. As far as where people can find us, I mean, just type in my name in Google and whatever subject you're interested in, like Shemasyan Medical School interviews, or just go to the site shemasyanconsulting.com. I know you can link to it in the show notes and all that stuff. But if people, you know, people want to get in touch, they can shoot us an email or, you know, put in their question in a contact form, and it's usually me who responds, and it would be a treat to get to know folks.
Wonderful. That's great. Well, we'll do all of that. All of the links will be in the show notes. And again, thank you so much for coming on, and, you know, look forward to staying in touch.
My pleasure. You take care.